Okay, so New Testament time. All right. So now we're in the New Testament. Like the other ladies have said before, the law of Moses is still in effect when we are talking about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and part of Acts. And the rest we have the law of Christ, all the way to Revelation. And as everybody has said, there are principles within each one of these that you will apply to your worship in God. Okay, so the Greek word you most often used in worship. April did a wonderful job and it kind of tickled me when you say proskuneo, is that right? And it means towards, prosis toward, and kuneo is kiss, you know, kiss towards. So hopefully you're kissing towards someone you love. I'd hate to imagine you doing that to someone you're not, okay? So think of it that way. When I think of worship, you know, am I showing that affection towards God, whom I love? Okay? And again, similar definition in the Hebrew, it's obeisance, due reverence to, it's an act of homage or reverence. And as I was looking at the word worship, you know, in the Strong's and the Vines, I came across this in the Vines Expository Dictionary after it had, like, I think there's at least five different definitions of worship for the New Testament. And he said this: the worship of God is nowhere defined in Scripture. A consideration of the above verbs shows that it is not confined to praise. Broadly, it may be regarded as the direct acknowledgement to God of his nature, attributes, ways, and claims, which is what we will be focusing on, whether by the outgoing of the heart in praise and thanksgiving or by deed done in such acknowledgement. So, meaning there's not a nice little list anywhere in the Bible where it says worship is this and this and this and this. And we have it in other places, right? We have it in 1 John chapter 4, God is love. 2 Corinthians, it tells us charity or love is. Galatians chapter 5 tells us the works of the flesh are, and later on this, you know, the fruit of the Spirit is. So, again, ladies, and like these other ladies are going to tell you, the only way I am going to know how to properly worship God is by the things that have, in Romans 15:4, the things that have been written before time. These things are written to instruct us. And I know I'm talking to the cream of crop here, all right, I know that, but... and I want to encourage you to keep doing that, okay? All right, so the first example we had in the Old Testament was Cain and Abel in Genesis 4. The wrong tribute was brought to worship. It was disastrous. And even in, like I said, the New Testament, you need to pay attention to what tribute you're bringing to God in worship. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 16:1. I'm sure many of you can... I mean, the men, when they do take up the collection, this is probably read almost every Sunday for us. 1 Corinthians 16:1 says, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye." So this is the instructions for the collection. This was not just for Corinth. This is, Paul gave this to other churches in Galatia. And interesting thing is, we're going to focus on collections here. This is the only time you will see this word in the entire New Testament. It is logia, meaning, in a commercial sense, a contribution, collection, or gathering. So, what are the Corinthians to gather? It has to be something of worth. So, we're talking about money, some form of currency, something of tangible value that I can use to purchase things in an economy. And you might be thinking to yourself, well, of course, God's talking about money, all right? But how many times have you heard this said? I may not give a lot of money, but I give a lot of my time to the church. Right? And I'm not talking about that person that doesn't have a lot to begin with, and they're giving as much as they can, and so they feel like, I need to do more. I'm talking about the person that substitutes one for the other. Right. Let's look at Luke chapter 17, verses 7 to 10. And Jesus addresses this. Luke chapter 17, verses 7 through 10. But which of you, having a servant plowing or feeding cattle, will say unto him by and by, when he is come from the field, go and sit down to meat? And will not rather say unto him, make ready wherewith I may sup, and gird thyself and serve me, till I have eaten and drunken, and afterward thou shalt eat and drink? Doth he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I trow not. So likewise ye, when ye shall have done all those things which are commanded you, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. All right. So remember, this is Jesus talking here. We have a servant who has already worked the day in the field because that is what he has been commanded to do. And now we have him expected and commanded to serve his master supper. He says, gird up your loins, right? We all know what that means. He doesn't get off the hook for making the meal because he has already done the work in the field, right? It is expected of him to fulfill all of his obligations as a servant. And likewise, we are not excused for giving the proper tribute in our worship to God because we have already given our time to the church. They are two separate duties, okay? And don't get me wrong, time is very valuable. You as mothers know exactly what I'm talking about. You feel like you don't have enough hours in the day. But it cannot take our place of giving to God in worship. They're two separate duties. Look at Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25, verses 34 through 40. We know what's happening here. 34 through 30. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come ye, blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it to me. So remember when we talked about how there's giving should permeate your lives? This is it. But this is not giving in worship to God. They are two separate duties. Your time is definitely going to be required in performing these duties. But this is not worshiping God. Remember, you did a great job about differentiating. There are moments, specific moments, when I worship God. But giving of my time is expected of me as a servant. Okay, so I was like, hypothetically, what would be a great example to demonstrate this? Say, you go to the IRS and tell them, you know what? Filled out all my paperwork and I sent it in. But by the way, I'm not going to pay you money to pay this off. I'm just going to hang around the building and take out the trash and I'm going to pay it off that way. How you think that's going to work out for you, huh? I'm going to tell you how it's going to work out with you. You're going to end in jail or the loony bin. Maybe both, okay? We understand that from a very earthly sense. Let's apply it to a spiritual sense. Let's go to Luke chapter 20, verses 20 through 25. Luke chapter 20, verses 20 through 25. And this is, we'll just read it. And they watched him and sent forth spies, which should feign themselves just men, that they might take hold of his words, that so they might deliver unto him unto the power and authority of the governor. And they asked him, saying, Master, we know that thou sayest and teachest rightly, neither acceptest thou the person of any, but teachest the way of God truly. Is it lawful for us to give tribute unto Caesar or no? But he perceived their craftiness and said unto them, Why tempt ye me? Shew me a penny. Whose image and superscription hath it? They answered and said, Caesar's. And he said unto them, Render therefore unto Caesar the things which be Caesar's, and unto the God the things which be God's. We all know this. They're trying to trap Jesus in his words, and it doesn't work. And they ask him, Is it lawful to pay tribute to Caesar? And God says, Yes, because it's his in the first place. His face is on it. You didn't mint it. It belongs to him. All right? And we use this to, like, you know, you have an obligation to pay your taxes. We do. Unfortunately, we do. But let's not forget the ending. Jesus also said, you need to give to God what belongs to him. All right? If I have to pay my taxes using the proper tribute, it will also mean that I need to give to God and worship the proper tribute. All right? We don't want our tribute to be described as evil and rejected. We want it to be accepted, right? So remember, we talked about attitude and action. My attitude, in order to do this properly, I have to submit myself to God so that I can perform the action, which is giving the proper tribute to God. Okay. Our next example was Abram and his giving to Melchizedek. He taught us a lot, right? He taught us it's going to take some effort to give to God. However, I'm blessed, I need to give to God. He's the possessor of heaven and earth, so it all belongs to him anyway. But we're going to focus on the trust that we see Abram having in God in his giving to God in worship. And remember, he gave all of it back. He didn't keep any of it. It either went to Melchizedek or the king of Sodom. And you might be saying to yourself, oh, he was already wealthy. Think about it. The dude was rich. He had 300 of his own servants, trained servants. I'm not talking about guys that just watched the sheep. We're talking about these men were warriors and don't mess with me type, okay? He had at least 300 of those. Him and Lot had to already separate because their cattle was so large, the land could not support them both. He was rich, so you're thinking to himself, he doesn't need it anyway. But I want you to ask yourself this question. How many rich men, if you think in your head, would have given all of that back? Like the Elon Musk. What's the guy's name? Owns Facebook. A rich man's like, free money, I'll take it. Because they trust in money. But Abram trusted in God. All right, let's look at Mark chapter 10, 17. And I know I'm going to apply it to worship, to giving in God later. All right. Mark chapter 10, verse 17 and 22. We're going to use some comparison with this. Mark chapter 10, verses 17 through 22. And when he was gone forth into the way, there came one running and kneeled to him and asked him, Good master, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life? And Jesus said unto him, Why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, that is God. Thou knowest the commandments. Do not commit adultery. Do not kill. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Defraud not. Honor thy father and mother. And he answered and said unto him, Master, all these have I observed from my youth. Then Jesus, beholding him, loved him and said unto him, One thing thou lackest. Go thy way. Sell whatsoever thou hast and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven. And come, take up the cross and follow me. And he was sad at that saying, and went away grieved, for he had great possessions. So we have a young man here. He has been taught his entire life the law of Moses. He has kept it faithfully, right? And you see a difference here. He's in earnest when he's asking this. He's not doubting. He's not sarcastic, like you see the Pharisees and the Sadducees in their communication with Jesus. And we have other accounts of this in Matthew and Luke, but the reason I chose Mark was for verse 21, all right? And Jesus beheld him, and he loved him, right? This conversation is so much different than with the Pharisees and the Sadducees. You see in this, you see respect from this young man. You see understanding of his authority from this young man. And so when Jesus tells him to sell everything, this is not to humiliate him. Not like he's doing to those Pharisees and the Sadducees. I mean, he is knocking them down a peg. It's like, you think you're hot stuff. Well, you're really not. Okay? He's telling them this so that he will get into heaven. All right? And he's not telling him to sell everything because he's rich either. And sometimes we get that a little bit confused. You know, riches equal sin. It's not what's happening here. God made Abram rich. He made Job rich. That's not what's happening. So what's the difference between this young man and Abram? Well, we go further down in verse 24. And it says, "And the disciples were astonished at his words, but Jesus answers again and saith unto him, Children, how hard is it for them that trust in riches to enter in the kingdom of heaven?" He put more trust in his money than he did in God. This is a religious man. He follows the Jewish religion, but he's missing that one thing. All right? Trust here in the Greek word is pytho. And one of its definitions is to have confidence or make a friend of. Am I a friend of my money and I'm making my money my friend? Or am I described in Abram in James 2:23 as a friend of God? Remember, you can't serve two masters. Okay. Either way, it's going to affect my giving to God in worship. And it's like, when you trust in money instead of God, it's like saying, I'm holding back on my giving to God because I don't believe God will provide for me, but my money will. Let's look at Romans chapter 10, verse 3. Romans chapter 10, verse 3. "For they, being ignorant of God's righteousness and going about to establish their own righteousness, have not submitted themselves unto the righteousness of God." We have the Jews here. The law of Christ has been stated, and they still want to follow their own form of righteousness. All right? They will not let the law of God, law of Moses, go. All right? Why? Because they won't trust in God. They will not submit themselves to God, because they want to hold on to what's comfortable. This is comfortable here. I feel safe here. And let's be honest. Sometimes when I put my trust in somebody, it can be unsettling at first. Right? But there's a reason I trust in them. Because they have proven that they can be trustworthy. God has proven to us numerous times that he is trustworthy. Right? So this is what happens to the rich young ruler. He's like, I'm comfortable here. This fits my version of righteousness. And leaving my version of righteousness to go to God's righteousness is more than I can take because I trust my money more than God. Let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6, 17 and 19. Oops, there we go. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17 and 19. I'm sorry. Did I say it? Yeah. I can't even find it in my own Bible. Oh. All right. I'm sorry. 17 and 19. 17 and 19. "Charge them that are rich in this world that they may be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy, that they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life." All right, so God is telling us, Paul is telling us, riches are uncertain. So then you have the juxtaposition. God is certain. God is certain, meaning he's the only safe bet you can make. So you might as well put your money where you're going to get a guaranteed return. All right? You ever think about it that way? We put our money into investments. We put our money into a house. That house can be blown away by a hurricane. Those investments can get tanked in a minute. Banks are going down left and right. But who is certain? Who will always be there? You know I'm telling the truth. God is certain. All right? Look at verse 19. Laying up for them stores for themselves a good foundation against the time to come. When I read that, I thought of, you know, John chapter 14, verses 1 through 3, where God is going to go build this, you know, there's mansions waiting for this. But who has to lay the foundation for that? You and me. You and me have to lay that foundation. Okay? No one can do that for you. So I'm not saying that you automatically get to heaven because you put a lot of money in the plate. That's not what I'm saying. All right? Hear me good. That's what Mr. Terry says. Hear me good. All right? I'm saying trust in God. Trust in God when you give. All right? So we go to Mark 12. We see the opposite of not trusting in God. Mark chapter 12, verses 41 through 44. Mark chapter 12, 41 through 44. And Jesus sat over against the treasury and beheld how the people cast money into the treasury, and many that were rich cast in much. And there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in two mites, which make a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples and said unto him, Verily I say unto you that this poor widow hath cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury. For all they did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had, even all her living. All right, so the people are probably given a free will giving, a free will offering. We talked about that. Didn't specify amount. You brought what you were blessed with, right? And it wasn't a tithe. So it was dependent upon you. And remember, before this, Jesus has just cleared the temple of the money exchangers. I mean, he cleared house. So you can best believe people are on their best behavior here. And maybe one of those is like, you know, man, I know that guy Jesus is watching, so maybe I should put in a little more than I had intended to do. Okay? And what does the widow give? Material speaking, it is not much at all. This coinage is the smallest denomination, right? The smallest denomination you can put in there. I don't even know if you can break that down into a 10%. Okay? But spiritually speaking, she has given everything. We see in her worship to God, she is trusting in God. So we have, when we look at this, we see two complete opposites, right? One is young, the other may be older. She is a widow. We're not certain, but that's what I see in my head. You have one is rich and the other is poor. One is a man, the other is a woman. Now, I'm not saying women are automatic better givers, but, you know, just saying. Okay? All right. One trusts in money. The other one trusts in God. All right? She was trusting in God because she knew, how did Abram put it? The Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, and he will provide for her. All right? So, things you learn from Abram and from this widow, right? Trusting in God to provide is our attitude. And giving based on that trust will help us with our action, which is giving like I trust, right? And combined, that's going to be very pleasing to God, which is what we aim for, right? In our worship, we want to please God. All right, our next example, Jacob. We're going to talk about specific, being he was specific. I'm teaching Annabelle. I taught Annabelle to read, and let me tell you, that word was not fun, all right? And it's not fun for me. You look at the P, and you're like, specific, whatever, all right? He was very detailed in what he was going to give to God. How's that? All right, let's look at 2 Corinthians 9:7. 2 Corinthians 9, 7. All right. 2 Corinthians 9, 7. Every man according as he has purposed in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly nor of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. All right, we're going to look on the word. There's a lot in this verse, right? So we're going to look at the word purposeth. It is the Greek word meaning proahi reomahi, right? Sheena, you can tell Terrence that I said that right, all right? Tell Terrence I said that right, okay? Which means to choose for oneself before another thing, prefer, that is by implication, to propose, intend, okay? So remember as a kid, somebody hits you and you're like, you did that on purpose, meaning that was not an accident. You meant to do that. You ain't slick, as Chanel Bryant says. All right? Well, what are we choosing to, or meaning to give to God before I choose or mean to give to God in my worship? Okay? Remember this. Jacob was specific before God gave him anything. Before he blessed him with anything, he was specific. And I thought about this, and no matter what his circumstances. So I thought, well, we live our lives around worship times, right? I know 9:30, Bible class, I'm going to be there. There is nothing that's going to keep me from that. You want to go hiking on Sunday? No, I can't. I got to go worship God. You want to work on Wednesday night? No, I need to be at Bible class, right? We understand that. So why don't we apply that to our giving to God in worship? Why don't I live my spending around my giving to God in worship, right? New designer purse? No, I can't do it. It's going to cut into my Sunday offering. And you might be thinking, Robin, you don't own a purse. Well, guess what? I do. It's in my closet right now, okay? I've used it like 5 times in 20 years. Okay, but so that might not apply to me, but there are other things that, you know, may tempt me. But I don't, because I need to concentrate my effort to giving to God first. Okay? So what is going to help me be specific? Let's go to Colossians 3. Colossians 3, 1 through 2. Colossians chapter 3, 1 through 2. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. Right? Am I seeking God? Am I seeking to do his commandments? Is my mind an affection on God? And I can tell you from experience for myself, ladies, as I have continued in being a Christian and learning more and understanding what faithfulness really is and seeking God, it has really helped me with the money part. Okay? I understand now it's not mine. I understand I need to trust in God. Do my seeking God first, right? And that helps with both my attitude and my action. And because of that, I won't be afraid to be specific. Because let's face it, sometimes it's like, man, if I commit this, I put it in my mind, and I don't give it, then I'm lying to God. You're weary about it. But remember, God provides for you. You trust in God, right? There's another thing that does help me be specific. Let's look at Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14, 28 through 30. All right. Luke chapter 14, 28 through 30. For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first, and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation, and is not able to finish it, all that beheld it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build, and was not able to finish. Biblical precedent for a budget. All right, so maybe that's not what it's really talking about, but it is a good example, right? You should have an idea of money coming in and money going out before I get to Sunday. I mean, not just that Sunday, maybe like a couple month Sundays or maybe even a year Sunday, right? I came across this when I was researching this, and there's a gentleman named V.P. Black. You guys may have known him, who may be a little older than me. He was a preacher of the gospel. He was a member of the church, and this is what he said. There are 89 chapters in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John combined, so 89 chapters. And the subject of giving is discussed 123 times in these four books. You remember when I said giving? All right. And then that was in his book, Rust as a Witness. And remember, that's just the gospel accounts. Right? He also said, we must keep in mind the Bible talks more about money than it does about faith, repentance, confession, baptism, church organization, qualifications of elders and deacons combined. All of these, so that was, count on my fingers, seven. We have seven subjects that are instrumental and foundational to the church as we live as New Testament Christians. And all of that combined does not eclipse the amount of times that the Bible talks about money. I mean, I didn't think about that until I started doing this. And yes, I am. Thank you that you made me do this. Okay? But I never thought about it. So if the Bible has so much to say about the subject money, then maybe I should learn about that. Maybe I should educate myself on that. Maybe I should pay attention to it. And remember, there is a difference between attention and affection. They are different. Great, I'm going to have to talk louder. Let's look, well, we all know 1 Timothy 6:10, right? The root of all evil is the love of money. All right? I don't love money, but I'm going to pay attention to it. I don't love the devil, but I'm going to pay attention to him and the wiles that he's putting out there. And one of those wiles is that you can be ignorant on how money works. And for some reason in our society, we think talking about money is rude. It's rude. Do you know in Japan that when you give somebody a gift, the receiver knows exactly how much you spent on that gift? I mean, it is no secret. So if you want to pay forward a gift you got at Christmas you don't like, that is not going to go over. The reason that you will know how much that gift costs is you are expected to give a percentage of that gift back. It's like, okay, I gave you $10. That's great. Now you owe me one. Yes. Yes, Lindy. Yes. But why? It's to show some appreciation and thankfulness and gratitude for the gift that I gave you. It is okay to talk about money. What's not okay is to love money and become obsessed by it. You will save yourself much pain and heartache if you educate yourself on how money works. And one of the things you should know is that money is not forever. You can have a lot, you can have a little, and then you can have none. It will not always be there. God will always be there. All right, so things that help me be specific. One, I seek God first. Two, make sure I understand how money works. And ask somebody in your congregation, hey, look, you know what? They seem to be doing all right. Maybe I should go ask them, how do they do their finances? There's a guy named Dave Ramsey. He's pretty good too, okay? Educate yourself on money. All right. Now we go to our mosaical example, which is tithes. And we learned that it was very important to the Levites and to the priesthood. Without it, the commands of God were not being taken care of. And you know where I'm going with this. Nothing happened. has changed. There is nothing new under the sun. You still need money to make things happen. That's just the way the world works. Just think about it locally in your congregation. This is what money does. Pays for the building, pays for the electrical, the water, the land, the bread and juice for the communion, the nice little plates in which they're served, the toilet paper and the paper towels in the bathroom, the trash bags, the soap, the cleaning supplies. List goes on. This is just material things and local to your individual congregation. And where do we get the money? We get it from our giving in worship to God. And you might think, yeah, that's pretty mundane, everyday boring things, but it's going to matter when you go to the bathroom and there's no toilet paper, isn't it? So that's just the material side, but obviously there is a much more important spiritual side. Let's go to Philippians 2, 25 to 27. Philippians 2, 25 through 27. Yet I suppose it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and companion in labor and fellow soldier, but your messenger and he that ministered to my wants. For he longed after you all and was full of heaviness because that ye had heard that he had been sick. For indeed he was sick nigh unto death, but God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I sent him therefore the more carefully, that when ye see him again ye may rejoice, and that I may be less sorrowful. Receive him therefore in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such in reputation. I went further than I was supposed to, but it's pretty good. 25 through 27. As you read this, you understand that Paul was in need. Right? He was in need and he needed help. Let's also go to 10 through 19. Philippians 4, 10 through 19. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly, that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein ye were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I know both now how to be abased and how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. Notwithstanding, ye have well done, that ye have communicated with my affliction. Now ye Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only. For even in Thessalonica ye sent once and again unto my necessity, not because I desire a gift, but I desire fruit that ye may abound to your account. But I have all and abound. I am full, having received of Epaphroditus the things which were sent from you, an odor of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God. But my God shall supply all your need according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus. So the Philippians have brought Paul a gift. And this is one of those read between the lines passages. He doesn't tell you exactly all the trouble that he has been through. So, I mean, ask yourself, how do you learn to be content in hunger and suffering? It's because you have to be in them first. You don't learn that not being in those states. And what do the Philippians do? They are able to bring comfort to him. They're able to bring encouragement to him. And how were they able to do that? By their giving to God in worship. All right? In verse 14, it shares that you have shared with my affliction. All right, they understood the situation that he was in and the need he had, and they didn't want him to face it alone. But in order to be able to do that, because that's when I talked about tribute in the first, there is no way I can write a check for your time that you gave to the church and send it off to that brother in that missionary field and say, here, go buy something with this. It's not going to happen. All right? And you feel the love of the Philippians and Paul when you read this whole thing, and he calls them beloved. He calls them brethren. There is a deep bond between the Philippians and Paul. And why? How was that possible? Obviously, they sent Epaphroditus, and for some reason, he wasn't able to come right away. Maybe they didn't have enough that they felt they could, you know, help him with. Maybe there was something on the way that stopped him, but you will never understand the true fellowship and the fraternity, or whatever girls call it, between Christians when you have supplied each other's needs, especially through giving. Your bond will be so much stronger. It'll be so much closer. Okay? You will be encouraged and grow as a Christian. And how is that possible? Through your giving in worship. When I'm supposed to be done, aren't I? Yeah, Holly's smiling at me. I'm sorry. All right. Remember, your giving counts. So when you put that money in that plate, think about this. This giving can help bring somebody the gospel and save them from hell. This giving can help that missionary in that country preach to those people that are starving for the truth. Think about that the next time you give to God in worship. So, obviously, we're not going to get to the law of Moses here, but think about this. Attitude and action. They have to be together. Like I said, maybe one will catch up with the other. Maybe you're good at the one and the other catches up, but you need to get them together, right? Trust in God. And if you don't get anything from this, I hope you understand what I said. Giving to God in worship is not just putting that check in the plate or that money or whatever. All right? It is the whole process. I got to give to God, myself to God first. I've got to submit to God. I've got to trust to God. I've got to know that my giving will save someone from hell eternal. Okay? And then the culmination of that is actually physically putting it in the collection. Okay? So I hope you learned something, and thank you for your attention.